So I'd really like to know, and this is actually to help our members at IT Rockstars. We're building out some funnels. We've had this focus on 20 leads in 20 days, and it's all through webinars. But we're trying to figure out, okay, which webinar is really going to drive engagement? What one's going to get the most signups? What's the hot topic at the moment? And there's three topics that I see, but I might be completely wrong because I'm not dealing with small businesses anymore. I'm dealing with MSPs. The hot topic of 2020, starting 2025 or February now, is AI, it's cyber, or it's something else. What would you say that the hottest topic is on the business owners, small business owners, small medium sized business owners are want to know about from an IT perspective? When you're going to this event shortly, what's the thing that's going to draw them in? I'd really love to know what that is.
Yeah, wouldn't I too? I think there's classifications in there, ranges, and I think that also affects MSPs. Some specialize in particular sizes of companies, and some just cross the road. I think AI is definitely a topic of interest to a classification of small businesses. I think the smaller businesses, the let's say under 10, maybe even under 20 users, I think their business owners. Does AI interest them? Yeah, maybe. But at the heart of what they want, they just want IT to work. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to spend a ton of money. They just want it to work. They want it to be reliable. The savvy ones know they need to invest in cybersecurity and maybe even are doing that. But I think at their core, they just want it to work and not be an obstacle, not that they're not running around putting out IT fires.
Let's put this another way. If you so it almost sounds like there's three layers there. You've got the smaller sized companies that are just like they just want the IT to work. Then you mentioned the savvy, they've maybe got more revenue and they're maybe more focused on the cyber and the risk. Would is the next tier up then maybe that's where we're talking about AI? Is it almost like three tiers there or
I think so, and there might be a little blending across them a little bit at their
okay.
edges. I think above that, they've got a leg in cyber already. They've got history, so they're not a startup company. They've been around. They've got a technology foundation that works. So now they're looking at better ways to improve. Even the grocery store here, there used to be 25 checkout lanes. Now they only occupy two of them, and they have the self-checkout lanes fully populated. So
I hear
there's
they're
like
going
10
back
checkout
though.
lanes
I
that
hear
aren't
they're going to
used.
reverse that. Like I that's why I heard that
There
they're
are
actually.
some businesses that have talked about doing that. I've heard
Yeah.
that from some of the businesses, but from our local ShopRite, which is our major grocery store in New Jersey, or the
Yeah.
chain, that's not the case. They on a given weekend, they'll have maybe two live registers open, maybe three if you're lucky. And there'll be lines, my wife complains about this, there'll be lines like 15 people deep because if you've got five items, 10 items, yeah, you'll go through self-checkout. If you've
Yeah.
got one to two shopping carts full of items, you're not going to self-checkout. It's just not it's not realistic, but that's what they force us to do up here.
Okay.
So yeah, it's an interesting world. But yeah, I think that's the thing. The businesses who are a little bit more established and probably a little larger in size, they will look more towards how to improve efficiencies, how to improve business. What can AI do for me? Where's my productivity gain? Can I free up my employees or add something new to attract new customers? Those are the ones who are a little bit more progressive in nature.
Okay, so if I were an MSP then, and I wanted to attract in maybe not a small business that wastes my time and doesn't give me a lot of profit, and I wanted to attract in that larger type of business that maybe has this need that's maybe not being fulfilled by their current provider, and maybe quite happy with what their current provider does, but they just there's this element of cyber, element of AI. Come in there, and it's almost like a partnership. Have you seen anything like that where there's maybe a it's a larger company, they maybe already have an internal IT team that's doing the function of the MSP, but they just don't have the AI knowledge or the risk, the compliance knowledge in there.
I think that's a given fact. I think if you are, let's keep it easy and say under 100 employees, you don't have the same, and you have internal IT. Your internal IT does not have access to the same resources, experience, knowledge, and tool set that an MSP does. An MSP is partnered with a lot of different businesses in the industry to provide different functions. And an internal IT guy, you're already spending money on that internal person. Probably if they're really good, you're probably spending, let's say, $100,000 a year. You could easily spend anywhere from 80 to 150. So you're spending all that money on one person who you're going to have to pay benefits to. You haven't spent an iota of time on the technology tools. None of the security layers, none of the tech tools that you're using, none of the protections and monitoring. And you're dependent on the, on that one individual who's more interested in when he's getting his vacation time, right? So working, when you're sub 100 employees, and you could easily argue more than that, but when you're sub 100 employees, you're far better working with an MSP because they'll have access to standardized tools and efficiencies and automations and monitoring and have the experience of working with a lot of different businesses and a lot of different technology vendors to provide you that value in your business. Not just to stabilize and improve your technologies, but to find ways to make them more efficient, to help guide you to build technology roadmaps. And that's where the core differentiator is between an MSP and a break-fix IT provider. And a lot of business owners don't necessarily know that. If they've never had the experience of working with an MSP, they're still in that break-fix model. They don't know the difference. And that has to be as much an education point as cybersecurity as a whole, because they don't understand that either. They think it's not going to happen to them.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really good point. The way that's always, I've always sold it was that as opposed to relying on maybe one to five internal IT people, they've got a set knowledge. They only know the one system. The MSP brings in the value because they're working with multiple different types of customers, multiple different types of systems. And it's almost like they know, they see what's out there and what's possible, and what the opportunities are with technology that an internal IT team just doesn't have the knowledge on, because they just don't know what they don't know. But because you're working across all these multiple environments and technologies, you're in a really well positioned place to offer something almost like a value add to this internal team that maybe just doesn't have that expertise. And that's almost like where I see like the opportunity right now is like, just based on what we're talking about here just now, Chris, is like there's the compliance one, which a lot of MSPs are focusing on. I don't see as much focus on the AI though. Yeah, we're using that. We've got Copilot up and running. We're using it. We're doing it for, so I know that you're, like, you're using it for some of your LinkedIn stuff, and I see other people using it, but I'm not hearing the stories about how AI is like transforming a whole part of the business. From a marketer, I know like what it can do for marketing, but I'm not hearing about that from MSPs. We put this AI in, it's doing this thing. It allows the staff to get onto the higher end tasks. So I think there's a huge opportunity right there.
I think that is a difference too in age. Compliance has been around for a while. There's been compliance in different forms for a much longer period. AI has really become mainstream in the last year or two. Mm-hmm. And now it's breaking into not just the business world, but even into the consumer world. You can get it with Microsoft with Copilot. You can get it with Gemini with Google. And you even hear high school kids and college kids going to ChatGPT to get a leg up on their essay or whatever. So everybody's going in that route, but nobody has a real understanding of what it can do and how to use it. And there's not been a good standardization or consolidation of that type. You go to one AI and it's very different than another AI. I'm starting to see vendors combine AI capabilities into a single platform. Okay. There's one in particular, I don't know if you want me to mention them. There's one in particular who comes out of the MSP vendor space and has started an AI company where he has combined several different AI technologies and learning modules into a service that MSPs can resell. Hats AI.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the guy's name.
Jimmy Hats. Yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy. Yeah. I see him in LinkedIn all the time. Yeah.
Yep. He was certainly working with him at his previous company, and he's been on that now for about a year, I think. I'm not working with his platform, but I've checked out their website a couple times and all of that. And he's the first one I've seen put it together as an offering for MSPs to use to sell an AI service to their customers. But he's putting together different AI modules to make that work. And I think that's the thing, right? You as MSPs, we have security tools, for example, that use AI in threat detection. We're not directly using the AI, but the tools use it. Now you get into ChatGPT, where it helps us to write scripts for automation that we can do in our technologies, PowerShell scripts or whatever. And then you get into the content generation that it can do, both in terms of marketing content, but also in terms of just cleaning up an email and making it look better. Even an introductory email to a prospect, you can use that as a leg up on creating that stuff. So we're seeing that kind of thing, but nobody has a great understanding, I think, yet in terms of end users, how to use it and what it can really do for us.
Yeah, I see some people picking up and they're using it all the time. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, in ChatGPT, I use it all the time for a lot of different things. And I think the key thing, and I posted about this a lot too, is look, it's a tool like any other, but it's not a hammer, okay?
Yeah.
The hammer serves its purpose and it's pretty obvious what it does. It's great to do that content generation, whether it's a script, an email, a marketing blurb, a social media post, whatever. It's great to use it, but you have to review what it produces and edit it, and oftentimes even humanize it, because a lot of times you can identify it's AI generated because of its tone or its wording. So you
can spot it a mile away when I see something AI generated.
Yeah, I always review it and I always catch just like, that's not how anybody would say that. You have to reword and review what it produces for you. But it is 80% of the way, right? So if you use it right and you recognize that you do have to, you can't stop with what it generates and you have to take it a step farther and review it and edit it, it still did 80% of the work for you. You just got to remember to do the other 20.
Do you have any use cases at the moment for business? I remember asking this about a year ago. I think it was in the Tech Tribe when it first came out. I was like, okay, it's cool. It does all this cool stuff. Give me a use case that you're using with your client. One of your clients, use case, have you introduced to them an AI that they're now using in their business to make them more efficient?
I've actually found two types of people at client sites. The ones who embrace it and are a little more tech savvy, a little more computer friendly, not tech averse, they've naturally already done that, right? ChatGPT, not knowing what ChatGPT is today is like not knowing what an iPhone is. You're one of those Amazon tribes, right? Everybody knows what ChatGPT is. They may not know how to use it, but they know it exists. So they go there and they'll ask it a question. Are they using it optimally? Do they understand the prompts? Do they understand what its real capability is? Not necessarily, but I found that end users are already going there to help them with what they want already, whether it's an email or an automation script. The other side of the fence are the users who are tech averse, the ones who don't even know how to use their cell phone, don't even know how to look up information on their phone, don't understand what the...
They don't know how to use Google, yeah.
They don't know how to use Google, exactly. They'll ask you the question, not recognizing Google right in front of them, they could have asked answered themselves. So that group of people, they're not engaging with ChatGPT because they're not engaging with anything. So I haven't directly introduced any AI-specific service to a client, because they're finding it out on their own what they want to do individually. I'm not sure that anything is even fun-baked to offer a full service. I think it's intriguing what Jimmy's doing with his platform. I'm just not a member of it, so I can't speak to how I could use it with a client just yet. So I haven't really gone that far. And my exposure to Copilot is that it's not as good as ChatGPT, in my personal opinion. So I tend to focus and use ChatGPT more.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. So I use both. And you can't use Copilot in the same way, but it seems to want to steer towards what's already in your Microsoft tenant before it goes and creates what ChatGPT does, which is just solely focusing on one thing. I thought I'd ask that question because I'm just going around asking everyone what you're using it for, just to get some like really good insights. Like the one that I heard today and I saw, I actually went and tested it out. So Copilot now has it's Copilot for SharePoint sites. So you can literally have, like, say for example, HR, this is the example I saw today. It was the HR policies. So there's going to be like 10 of them for the organization and they're in the SharePoint folder. So you can point Copilot, an agent, at that folder, and then you can create a chat agent based on the knowledge that's in that folder. So the way this HR department worked in the past was they had an HR inbox. So any questions an employee had, how many, what's the annual leave? How many days do I get a year? Or what's our full-time contract? That was the question that I
saw
today.
Data analysis, yeah.
Yeah. So you can just in the chat ask that. It will go and it already has the policies and its knowledge, HR policies. So it just spits back the answer. So I'm thinking, okay, that's cool. You've got, but what about questions that aren't in the policies? And this relates to the IT help desk. You've got users coming to you with all these different questions and problems. And like, you could create like a frequently asked questions, like, and then just like feed that into the bot. So anytime someone's got that question, you would have an answer for it. So it's going to take the load off of these really basic questions, like, how do I reset my password? I know it's not going to change for us because from an end user's perspective, they still just like to speak to someone and get the problem solved. But I just, yeah, just get these sort of practical examples so I can see how others are using it and then to draw in some where the opportunities are more than anything else. Chris, I want to change tact a little bit. You've got this banner in the background. You mentioned to me that you're going to an event. What are you going to be talking about with this event? And what's the event about?
It's a regular networking event, but this one, unlike some of the others, actually has vendor tables as well, and they restrict the vendors. So once they have a category of that vendor in place, they don't bring in competitive vendors. So okay. I found out about it early on, and I said, let's get a vendor table. Now we can get some of the traffic going in. Yes, I'll be networking with everyone as I typically would at a networking event, but now I'll also have a vendor table to attract people to me. So I have a lot of business swag and giveaways. I'm hoping, I haven't found out yet, but I'm hoping I'll have power there so that I can do visual demonstrations. One of them being like, get your domain cyber score. Cyber score is a great one. I have another vendor who's created a really cool phishing game. And it's very gamified. So it's got a leaderboard. They can do a phishing. It literally takes about 20 to 30 seconds. Okay. And it teaches them to examine the characteristics in a message and mark them as safe or dangerous. And then they get their overall score and then pops it into the leaderboard. So it's a great little game to get people interested. So for me, it's not a presentation, right? There's going to be a ton of people there. So okay. I'm really just looking to get them engaged in a conversation and to come back and let's talk, let's have a conversation, let's schedule a lunch or something after, reach out, that kind of thing.
All right. So I'm going to put you in the spot now. A lot of our audience are MSPs here. So they're not small business owners. It's MSPs that are listening to this.
Yeah.
What makes you unique in the marketplace?
Oh, great question. I tell you what, I'm a single person MSP. Okay. I've been in business 21 years.
MSP.
Yeah, I did have employees for a while, but I've been running it solo for a long time now. And when you talk to vendors, business partners, clients, it's always a statement to say the tool set that I have, the experience that I have, because I've been doing it for 21 years. I see a lot in the forums of MSPs who are doing $400,000 a year in revenue and they have three staff. I've been doing more in revenue for years by myself. Because if you have the right standards in place, you can achieve those goals. You can achieve those objectives.
It's a really interesting piece of information. Because I know for a fact a lot of people would love less staff. What do you put that down to? Like, how have you managed to achieve higher revenue without that staff commitment?
It's the efficiencies. Look, I got all of my business through referrals. Nurturing relationships is key. And a lot of larger MSPs, certainly far larger than I am, I know them personally, don't really nurture their relationships. It's a transactional thing, right? They bill a customer, they wait for a phone call. And I have a customer, I had lunch with an old colleague or an old customer yesterday who's got a startup. It's not a good fit for me to be his MSP at this point because he's a startup. So he engaged another IT company purely on cost. But this is now the second time he's engaging me in a project because they just don't fit the bill. They cover his support needs and because they're a cheaper monthly fee. But when it comes down to the real work and the future of their business, he's talking to me. Because of the nature of our relationship, because of the nurturing and the relationships that you build. And I was ahead of the curve in cyber. I was doing it before the pandemic, starting it and introducing it to clients and just evolving it as we go. And keeping up with those efficiencies and those standards and having the right systems in place, even though they cost more than the cheap systems, in the long run, they pay off and they allow you to scale and to add more clients efficiently without having extraneous staff. So my support volume has always been traditionally very low. And the more I added management systems, the less I needed employees. When I first started my business, I didn't have an RMM. I was purely break fix like everybody in the industry back in the 90s and early 2000s. And I added some employees in the 2000s. They were all gone by 2010, 2011. The recession hit and they had to go. But by that point, I had already partnered with key players in the industry and had standards in place and automation platforms, management platforms that centralized everything and made it very easy to scale. It didn't need the human need. And if you had built the infrastructure for clients properly, spec'd it properly and held them to it, and have the other standards in place to maintain it, your support costs go way down. And that's what I've experienced. My support volume in all of the 20 years has been very low. It's always been more on advancing technology projects, more recently on the security side of things, improving that, but always on more advancing of technologies than on having to be on the phone for support issues.
Okay. Yeah, I certainly see that's, that makes a lot of sense. And I do see, like, certainly if I go back, cast my mind back 10 years ago when I was just getting out of the MSP game from my own MSP, the cybersecurity was definitely a part of it. Then it was definitely ransomware back in 2013, 2014. But that support, it does seem to be, it's not as big a requirement, it feels. And it's still there, but it certainly, that seems to be where the market's going. That's what I feel anyway. All right. This is my last question for you, Chris, because I like to try and keep these not too long. What's the biggest lesson you've learned running your MSP in the last, was it 20 years, 21 years?
I think it's probably actually a more recent lesson. I've gotten every client on referral.
Yep.
And that works well when the referrals come in. But as an MSP owner and a business owner, and most of us come from the tech side of things, so we focus on the tech side of things because it's easy for us. Mm-hmm. It's our second nature. So even when the referrals are coming in good, you have to find new business all the time elsewhere. Never rely on what you have, because what you have today may not be what you have tomorrow. As they say, if you're not growing, you are shrinking. And it's been 21 years of pretty steady growth, sometimes in leaps, sometimes in steps. But now it's that time where referrals have ended and it's more about marketing and networking and building new relationships, partly because the other ones have sold their companies. You got to keep doing that. You can't rely solely on referrals and you can't rely on what you have. You have to keep moving in a forward direction. Always evolve, always adapt.
Cool. Thank you for being on the show, Chris. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the name of your company?
One-to-One Tech Solutions out of New Jersey.
And they can find the website. Is it one-to-one.com or one-to-one solutions?
Team1to1.com.
Cool. That's a brand new website, isn't it?
It is. Just launched in January, and I think very different. So I do welcome any of the listeners to go and check it out. The one key thing that I really wanted to focus on that was that it speaks to business owners and answers their questions, their mindset, rather than promoting sales and services of what I do, really addressing their pain points and their problems. So the standout on my site, and I won't claim to be the first one who thought of it, but the standout on my site, there's no services page.
Because oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
IT services it, like, websites are... Yeah, they're full of these services pages with all these technical terms. Business owners in the small business space, they don't know what those technical terms are. They don't know what they're looking for. They want their tech to work. And that was the driving motivator for my new site.
Love it. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Scott. Always a pleasure. Yeah.